Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. This year, we have seen record wildfires across the West, burning more than 11 million acres so far. Parched land stricken by an unrelenting drought stretches from California through Canada and Alaska. Weather patterns changing worldwide, ice sheets melting, sea levels rising, plants and animals' behavior shifting, and trees flowering sooner. These are some examples of the effects of climate change scientists have long predicted. Environmental leadership is needed now more than ever. Since 2000, the Brower Youth Awards have recognized young people making amazing strides in confronting these challenges. To date, 92 young environmentalists have been honored for their leadership and innovation, from greening a high school and campaigning for green spaces and urban gardens to mobilizing students for environmental change. This year's winners are creatively confronting major environmental issues. So what can we learn from them, and what really drives them to do this work? Joining us today to talk about what they are doing are a few of this year's Brower Youth Award winners. Celeste Najero was a high school student in drought-stricken Reno, Nevada. She rallied her peers to renovate their high school bathrooms. They got a grant and installed low-flush toilets, auto-sensor lights, and automatic hand dryers and faucets. Celeste went on to tackle single-use plastic bottles and bags, and she now designs curriculum on sustainable living for local schools. Celeste is 20, and she is from Sparks, Nevada, and she joins me in studio. Hi, Celeste. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. And in 2013, J.P. Vanoles joined Activists Coming to Inform Our Neighborhood, or ACTION. A year into his time with ACTION, he was voted president. He then focused the group's work on green spaces and urban gardens. J.P. now leads presentations at various local schools and organizes a first-of-its-kind youth summit focused on educating youth and their parents about the environmental issues facing South Bronx. J.P. is 19, and he is from the Bronx. Hi, J.P. Welcome to the show.
What's up?
Nice to have you, and welcome to the Bay Area.
Thank you.
And Ryan Camaro is using art to help save the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta. Last fall, Ryan led a three-week tour to 18 California cities, where he presented Sucked Dry to local audiences and facilitated discussions about the fragile Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta ecosystem. Ryan is 22, and he is from Stockton. Hi, Ryan. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going?
It's nice to have you. So thank you all so much for joining us. And congratulations. I have to say this is one of my favorite shows because it's so inspiring. And I hope that you can make the Brower Youth Awards. It's on October 20th, Tuesday, from 7:30 to 9. It's a free awards ceremony, and you can find more information about it at yourcallradio.org. It'll be at the Herps Theater in San Francisco. So why don't we first start off by talking about what really inspires you to do this work? JP, when did you start becoming interested in environmental work and activism?
Okay.
You're 19.
Yeah. So I was born and raised in the Bronx. And, you know, just growing up in the Bronx, you could see the hardships that people will go through every day. I live them every day, you know. So I definitely experienced a lot of environmental and social injustice within my neighborhood. So it was my sophomore year of high school that I heard about this program called ACTION, Activists Coming to Inform Our Neighborhood. I always had a passion for helping people. I do music, and I noticed that every time I write music, my main goal is to sort of relate to other people. And when I heard about the program, I just found out that there's another way to really just help people. So I guess I just always loved reaching out to people and sharing my message and just teaching people, in general. So, so I was very excited to just join ACTION and just join the movement within the South Bronx.
And again, ACTION is Activists Coming to Inform Our Neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that organization.
Oh, I love ACTION. I love ACTION so much. Activists Coming to Inform Our Neighborhood is a youth activist program that meets 3 days a week. And we work on environmental and social justice issues occurring in the South Bronx in general. So, we're a group of youth activists that's trying to make a change, showing that we can make a change, that no matter how young you are, no matter how old you are, nothing's impossible. I believe that the youth of today are the leaders of tomorrow.
And again, that is J.P. Vanoles. He joined Activists Coming to Inform Our Neighborhood. A year into his time with ACTION, he was voted president. He then focused the group's work on green spaces and urban gardens. And he is in the Bay Area to receive the 16th Annual Brower Youth Award. And what about you, Celeste? When did you first become interested in environmental issues?
Similarly to JP, it started in high school when I joined our school's green club, the Eco Warriors, which was co-founded by my older brother, actually. And so I joined with that. I explained my passions and my anger almost for some of the things that our school was not taking action in becoming a greener school. And our school hadn't been updated since 1974, resulting in a very wasteful school. And so that just is what led our path to this more sustainable future for the generations to come to that school. And so now we've left that legacy, and now the Eco Warriors are continuing to grow, and they are still making these lasting changes. And my little sister is actually the vice president of the Eco Warriors.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. And I love also that you got a grant and installed low flush toilets, auto sensor lights, automatic hand dryers and faucets, and a hydration station.
Right.
To basically let young people know that you don't have to buy a bottle of water.
Right.
You can bring in, here's mine, you can bring in a bottle and fill it.
Right.
And this makes a huge difference.
Yeah. That was a lot of the point, is I wanted to actually ban plastic water bottles from Reed High School, and I realized that wasn't as feasible. So I thought of the idea that we can encourage the use of reusable water bottles, and hopefully that will decrease the use of single-use plastic water bottles that ended up in the trash cans. So that definitely has shifted a little bit of the culture at Reed High School now.
Oh, yeah, I was going to ask you, how did students respond to that?
I made sure that there was an education component with that, just so that they know why we're doing this and why it's so important. And actually, the feedback from a lot of the students was very positive, and they were willing to make some changes in their own life, and as well as the teachers who sold water bottles in their classes actually stopped.
Oh.
And so it was a huge culture change at our school, definitely.
Is it common for teachers to sell water bottles?
I suppose a lot of the teachers did at our school. And so, I mean, we reached out to them and definitely had a very good communication on that. And some teachers did stop, and the teachers who didn't had reasonable, reasons why they do it, is to pay for their school supplies and things like that, which makes sense. So, yeah.
And Celestina Harrow, she's talking about the work she did as a high school student in Reno, Nevada, and she now tackles single-use plastic bottles and bags and designs curriculum on sustainable living for local schools. And what about you, Ryan? When did you first get involved and want to do more on environmental issues?
For me, it didn't actually start environmental. It started with community organizing in Stockton. Just because Stockton deals with a lot of economic depression, gang culture, drug abuse, murders and things, which is horrible stuff. But in response to that, I did a lot of like arts as mediation and like community conversation type of work, and volunteered at like a ton of different groups to kind of figure out what was going on in Stockton. And then came across Restore the Delta, which does really amazing work focused on anti-water privatization. And that group stuck with me really heavily. I really love the work that those folks do. So it kind of shifted, kind of like whereas I used to be super into like community mediation and arts access work, it kind of shifted to trying to use those mediums and that strategy to inform the public about really like horrible issues like water privatization and stuff like that. So, yeah.
And Ryan Camaro is also in the Bay Area, although he's from Stockton. He's in the Bay Area to receive a Brower Youth Award. And again, I hope you can make the ceremony. It's such an inspiring event. Next Tuesday at the Herbst Theater in San Francisco from 7:30 to 9. The event is free, and you can find information at yourcallradio.org. So we'll dive in and talk more specifically about all of the projects you're working on. But why don't you give us a sense of the conversations that are had today in high schools? Because we've done shows before about a curriculum that either does or does not address climate change and really talk about these issues. But is this something that students are really interested in? Is this something that you talk about in your classrooms, JP?
Yeah, personally, I feel like it's not talked about enough as it should be. I know sometimes in class, sometimes especially like in science classes, we do mention things about climate change. But personally, I feel like it should be addressed a lot more than what it is. I feel like everything that I learned about climate change was learned through my program here with activists coming to inform our neighborhood. I didn't really learn much about anything regarding climate change in high school itself. I feel like, if anything, I brought that into my school.
And you just graduated recently.
Yeah, I literally just graduated.
So how did the teachers respond when you brought this in?
They were fascinated. They were like, how did you know all of this stuff? They were asking me, like, why? What made you interested? I was telling them all about this program. Yeah, now I actually have a lot of the students in my school now applying to ACTION because they're interested in what I was telling them about and other things that I was doing. So, yeah.
And how did you find out about ACTION?
I found out about ACTION. Well, in 2013, I was part of a summer youth employment program. And so they usually pair you up to a different site within New York City. And they had paired me to a place called The Point CDC. And when I joined The Point, they were telling me about all these different programs that they offered throughout the school year. One of them that stood out was ACTION, Activists Coming to Inform My Neighborhood. They told me how I can apply. So I was like, okay, let me check it out. And I did. And within the next year, I became president. And it was just amazing.
And Celeste, what about you? You did so much work at Reed High School in Reno to renovate the bathrooms. You got the hydration station. Was this something that you were talking about in class?
I was very lucky to have my environmental science teacher was actually the advisor for the Eco Warriors Club. So she was all about it and ready to get the students aware and educated about climate change. Because I think if everyone knows what climate change is doing to our planet, everyone will care. And so I think that's what is kind of the issue, is that students don't know. And I know that as soon as they do know, they will take action and do whatever it is they can do to take it on. And we can really make the difference, honestly. And as an educator now in schools, I make sure that the teachers know about our curriculum with Keep Truckee Meadows Beautiful, which is the organization I work with. And we have a curriculum on our waste and how we can affect our waste stream in our community. And so it's not talked about as much, especially in elementary school. And I think if they start first grade all the way in through high school, we will be set. And you know what? We probably wouldn't need as much of this action that we're taking now. If everyone grows up educated that way, then it'll just be these values that are instilled in these humans. And, you know, it wouldn't be as hard to rally everyone and get everyone together. It would just be the normal thing.
Many hands make for light work.
Right, yeah.
Well, and I'd love to hear from listeners on this, because we have a lot of teachers listening, a lot of educators, a lot of parents with kids in school. So what are your thoughts on this issue? Is this something that is taught at your school? Celeste just says that these issues really should be taught in elementary school. And we've done some shows on how a climate change curriculum should be taught in schools. So we'd love to hear your thoughts on that. And if you have any questions or comments for our guest today, they are in San Francisco to receive the 16th Annual Brower Youth Award. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And if you work with youth on environmental issues, how do you engage young people on these issues? What really stands out for you? 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. So what about you, Ryan? What is being taught in schools in Stockton?
I think when it comes down to Stockton, I think like there is so much that is going on outside of the environmental crises that are really large and really like systematic. I think that people are kind of trying to deal with, you know, the impacts that reverberate more on a local level and in terms of, you know, economic inequality and the different, you know, struggles that people face on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, I think education, like fellow winners are saying, are so crucial because it allows people to articulate what exactly is happening and allow people to have to form strategies and solutions. Because when you're dealing with issues that you don't understand or don't have language to formulate around, it gets really difficult. I think it gets, you know, confusing. So I think that education is really a healing and reflective type of force that can, like, you know, move our generations and, you know, people to work together in a better way.
You make a good point. So, for example, in Stockton, there's poverty, violence, drug abuse, gang violence. You mentioned that. Talk a little bit more about what young people are facing in Stockton today.
I mean, I think that, like any other city, I think Stockton has a lot of, you know, socioeconomic and cultural divisions. The city is really spread out because of urban sprawl. So, you know, some school districts are underfunded. Some are doing great. There's parts of the city that they don't necessarily recognize or understand each other because people have different layers of privilege and elements that are hard to tackle. I mean, I think the conversations in our country about, you know, everything from like race to economics to culture to environmental degradation is like really hitting top notch, and it's trying to find ways to like link them together to be able to understand holistically like the bigger picture of what's happening.
Celeste, you're shaking your head. Does that resonate with what you see in Reno?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes, definitely.
Yeah. So talk a little bit more about that. What are you seeing in the Reno schools?
I was just actually mentioning this to some of the other winners, is that when I go into schools to teach, I normally go into Title I schools or low-income schools. And when I run into those classrooms, the kids are so excited because they want to do something good. Mm-hmm. They want to. And when I went to a private school and I taught, and it was obviously a different kind of privilege there. And I did my same presentation as always, and I did not get the same response as I always do in Title I schools. And I found that very, very interesting. And so I reflected on it a little bit, and I decided that they're kind of expected to do good, and it's not as big of a, I want to do this, and I really want to go home and talk to my parents like the other students at Title I or low-income schools do. And so I definitely see the different students that I come across who are either very excited and very motivated to, it's okay, you know, I do that anyways. It doesn't matter if I do it or not. So I definitely see that in just little 7-year-olds. So it's quite amazing.
And what about you, JP? You lead presentations at local schools.
What's your experience been like? I definitely agree with both of them. I definitely experienced the same thing. I actually went to a private school, so I definitely see what you're talking about. Yeah, I think that people just don't know. When I tell them about all these issues going on, that they're like, what? That really is going on? That's happening? I'm like, yes, that's happening, you know? So just getting people involved and seeing how they really can be interested in this. For example, specifically with my campaign, that campaign has been going on for a long time. The Sheridan Expressway campaign has been going on for a while. And they've been questioning, why is it that so many youth aren't involved in this campaign? And one of the things that I said was, I think it's because there's not enough youth involved. I feel like you need youth to attract other youth.
Right.
Right. So just like trying to tell them, like, you know, if we were to decommission the Sheridan Expressway and repurpose it, we could probably add things that they would like parks, more movie theaters. And so that made a lot of people pay attention to this campaign and brought a lot of people's attention, for sure.
J.P. Vinnels joined Activists Coming to Inform Our Neighborhood in 2013, and he leads presentations at various local schools and organizes a first-of-its-kind youth summit focused on educating youth and their parents about environmental issues facing South Bronx. And we'll ask you to explain more about the Expressway Project in just a couple of minutes. Awesome. We're also joined by Celeste Tinajero. She was a high school student in drought-stricken Reno, and she rallied her peers to renovate their school bathrooms. They installed low-flush toilets, auto-sensor lights. They got a hydration station. And Celeste now tackles single-use and plastic bottles and bags and designs curriculum on sustainable living for local schools. And Ryan Camaro is using art to help save the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta. Last fall, he led a 3-week tour to 18 California cities, where he presented Sucked Dry to local audiences and facilitated discussions about the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta ecosystem. And they are in town to receive the 16th Annual Brower Youth Award. The ceremony is next Tuesday, October 20th, at the Herps Theater in San Francisco from 7:30 to 9. It is a free event, very inspiring. I hope you can make it. Find ticket information at yourcallradio.org. And if you'd like to join us, we'd love to hear from you. If you have a question or comment for our guests, if you work with youth on environmental issues, how do you engage young people on these issues? If you work in schools, are these issues talked about? What can we do to make sure that more of these issues end up in the classroom? 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Richard in San Francisco. Hi, Richard. Welcome to the show. Hello, Richard. Did we lose Richard?
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Yes, enjoyed seeing you on Saturday, by the way. It's a little difficult to hear you sometimes because of the music.
Oh, thank you.
Coming in from the left, but really enjoyed it. Thank you. I love the enthusiasm of these kids. It's just terrific. And they're inheriting a situation that's very difficult. I was in Stockton recently, and I was appalled at the wide streets, the traffic lights, the strip malls. You could be anywhere in America. You could be actually anywhere, and it's in a terrible land use. So a lot of, in a lot of the ways, the cat is out of the bag there, and you know, reusing that land in a better way is going to face enormous hurdles in a capitalist society. The thing that happens is that this idealism is gradually often replaced by debt, mortgages, slipping back into the system, and by the time you get to be 55 or 60, you realize that you haven't done all the things you want to do. So I urge these kids to keep this enthusiasm up. It's just terrific. But we need to start at this, right at the beginning. We've got to start with town planning. We've got to pedestrianize streets. We've got to get rid of some of these enormous highways and put in bus lanes and rapid transit and put plazas and places for people to go instead. And one last comment. When I was a kid growing up in England in the 50s, at the end of the week, our rubbish bin, as we called it, was empty because the milkman collected the bottles. The bread man delivered every day. A man came around called the Rag and Bone Man once a month who picked up everything you didn't want and recycled it or reused it. Now, the trash cans are just enormous. And we've got to start right at that level as well. And I particularly urge you to concentrate on packaging. Again, when I was a kid, there was no packaging, basically, and we seemed to survive quite well. We got our groceries on a daily basis. Cornflakes were in a box, and when you'd finished, you used the box to start the fire, or you recycled the cardboard. Now everything is in plastic. It's difficult to get rid of it. And the packaging industry has got to be held to task here.
Oh, yeah.
We could reduce our landfills by 70 or 80% if packaging was more sensible. So I'll leave you with that thought. Thanks a lot.
Well, thank you so much, Richard. We did a show about the plastics industry about a year or so ago, and then recently did a show about the documentary Race to Zero. So you all would be really interested in this. The city of San Francisco is hoping to get to zero waste by the year 2020.
Wow. Wow.
We have some amazing recycling programs in
so
San
good.
Francisco.
Wow.
Just quickly before we go to break, is packaging something you focus on?
Oh,
Celeste?
Yes. Yeah, that's definitely something I talk to when I go into schools. And I try to give tips to students of how they can reduce their waste. And one of the big things I always say is buy the items with the less packaging. And I tell them, you're going to notice now that I said it, because there's packaging on everything. And it's so unnecessary. So, yeah, that's definitely something I push on.
And what's the response when you tell them that?
They say, I never thought about that. Mm-hmm. And so right after that, I hope that they do reduce their waste.
Right. And hold that thought. We're going to take a quick break. Today, I am speaking with three of this year's Brower Youth Award winners, amazing young people doing a wide range of work on environmental issues. Find more information about the event. It's next Tuesday at the Herbst Theater in San Francisco. Yourcallradio.org. We'll be back after this.
You're listening to Your Call on KALW, Local Public Radio. To take part in today's conversation, call 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK, toll free. Let us know if you're a first-time caller. We always like to hear from new voices. And if you'd prefer to write rather than call, you can email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment at yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11, it's World Have Your Say from the BBC. Stay with us.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will have a conversation with Amir Soltani about his new documentary, Dogtown Redemption, which gives a voice to three recyclers in West Oakland. Many people in the Bay Area survive by recycling trash. So what are their stories? That's tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are speaking to three of this year's Brower Youth Award winners. The event will take place next Tuesday from 7:30 to 9 p.m. at the Herbst Theater. It's a free ceremony. You can find information at yourcallradio.org. And today's guests, Celeste Tinajero, J.P. Vinals, and Ryan Camaro, along with three others, will be honored. And before the break, we heard from Richard, who had a question about packaging. And Ryan, he also was talking about Sacramento. He said he was in Sacramento recently and was put off by the fact that it's basically a lot of, there are a lot of strip malls there, and it looks like many other towns across the United States. And you wanted to comment on that.
Yeah. In terms of that, I think Sacramento and Stockton are very similar in terms of having kind of that like type of culture of like just all these strip malls and like urban sprawl, like he was saying. He said it was really daunting, you know, to try and reimagine our cities into places of, you know, better vitality and health. But he also spoke about packaging, and I think that like I definitely resonate with Celeste in terms of like the, you know, trying to keep an eye out on packaging through organizing just like across a statewide level, because doing the projects that I've been working on requires talking to tons of different folks. There's been a strong movement to try and denormalize plastic water bottles just because of their enormous environmental impact and just how just damaging it is. Not to mention, you know, there's a lot of like regulatory there should be a lot of regulations surrounding, you know, sourcing that water and where it's coming from, because, you know, especially in this drought.
Right. And then we did a show about that also. A lot of people are talking about the bottled water companies and where this water actually comes from. Mm-hmm. And should these companies be able to make a profit off of a resource? And many people in the Central Valley don't even have water, running water right now, because their wells have run dry.
Yeah. There's a lot of rural communities that are being hit hardest. Fairmead and East Porterville, a lot of different places. It's unreal. I remember hearing, I don't know if this is like true or not, but you know, they say that like Stockton might be running out of water in a year or something, and it's just like, okay, like what should we do?
Related to Richard's question, and again, thank you, Richard, for that question. Carlton writes in, whenever I see a report about food being served in schools, it's always wrapped in disposable material and being consumed with plastic utensils. Is anyone involved with this issue? Many years ago, school cafeterias provided reusable trays and utensils. And as Richard just pointed out, milk bottles were glass and refillable. Celeste?
So that's another topic that I really talk to my students about, because I just say, where do you see a lot of this trash coming from? And a lot of them will right away off the bat say the school cafeteria. And I say, okay, I can help you and assist you in doing something to get rid of that, but I really want it to be the student's plan and the student's idea, because if these 7-year-olds go to like the school district and say, we want to not waste as much styrofoam, plastic, and have so much packaging on our food, they'll most likely listen to these little ones, because they're the voice for themselves. And if a teacher does it, it's a little different than the students actually getting together and having that voice to do that. So I always encourage them and say, that could be an awesome project for you guys to do. And that's just another way of me trying to get them young, too.
I love that.
To get them started,
sure.
Right.
Public pressure.
And how do you connect with schools in Reno?
So it kind of has just been working out, actually. I'm recently graduated from high school, and so I've talked to my high school teachers to get me connected with other teachers, and it's kind of been word of mouth, really. And I've been just going to different schools all year so far.
And Celeste, again, she designs curriculum on sustainable living for local schools, and she's currently tackling single-use plastic bottles and bags, and not only talking to high schools, but also talking to young students, elementary schools.
Elementary schools.
And so what do you hear from young kids?
Oh, they're... like I said earlier, they're just so excited to do something. And I want them to, I have an hour to present, and I just give my all so that they're inspired. And I want them to be as passionate as I could be on, maybe it's not environmental issues, but in something. And I just want them to be passionate about something, because the second you are, you're willing to take it on and do anything. And so these kids, I just ask them one thing, and I say, all I want you to do today is go home and talk to your parents about what I taught you today. And that is recycling, reducing your waste, pretty much using the three R's. And so right when I say, okay, how are you going to make a difference? They're so they shoot their arms up, ready to give me an answer of what they're going to do at home or at school to really cut down their waste. And their response is always so positive and so enthusiastic. And it's beautiful. That's what keeps me doing it.
Well, thank you for the email, Carlton. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. Today, we have three Brower Youth Award winners in studio. They are in town to accept an award. The ceremony will be Tuesday night, 7:30 to 9 next Tuesday at the Herps Theater in San Francisco. It's a free awards ceremony. Very inspiring. You'll see them all speak along with a beautiful video looking at the work that they're doing, where they are from. And if you have a question or comment for our guests, we'd love to hear from you. If you work with youth on environmental issues, how do you engage young people? And if you're working on any interesting projects tackling environmental issues in your community, we'd love to hear your stories. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And JP, we were talking about the work you do educating youth and parents about environmental issues facing South Bronx. Talk about some of the issues you're currently working on right now. Earlier, you were talking about the Expressway Project.
Yeah, for sure. So the Sharon Expressway campaign has been around for over 10 years now. I joined about 2 years ago. And so really what I do is when I go to different schools or different organizations and talk about this project, I try to do it in the most entertaining, fun way as possible, because sometimes just talking about a campaign can be very long and very boring. So what I did was I tried to put my creativity into it. So what I did, I sort of created like a workshop game using Legos. So what I did was I created the Sharon Expressway using Legos. And when I did that, I also created like little buildings, like other like facilities. And, like, for example, the red Legos would signify hospitals. The yellow Legos would signify affordable housing. And then we had, like, the green ones. They would stand for, like, green space and parks. So when I would go to these schools and these other organizations, I would sort of play a game with them and ask them to, like, reimagine what would happen if we could possibly take down the Sharon Expressway and recreate a boulevard full of all these other amenities that would be beneficial to the community, such as like those green spaces and more movie theaters and hospitals, affordable housing, all those things that we desperately need in the South Bronx. So that's really the main purpose of the campaign and really what I do.
And then how do you work to take what you hear from them to the people who are making the decisions about how to use this space?
Right. So we sort of just show them like how many people are just involved within this campaign. We show them like that people do care and that this is our community and we should have a say. So we sort of like feel like, why should other people from outside the community make decisions for what should be in our community? Mm-hmm. We're the ones that are living there every day.
Right.
So we want to show them that, and hopefully it'll bring attention, because I feel like this campaign has been ignored for a very long time, and I feel like now having this youth involvement is starting to get a lot more attention, starting to make a lot more noise.
And do the people that you work with feel like their voice matters? Are they taking the information that you give to them and then turning it around to express their own opinions to city officials?
For sure. Definitely. I feel like people become so passionate because it's just this campaign can relate to people in so many different ways. Just by, like, for example, a Hunts Point community has so many skaters, so many people that are passionate about skating. So the fact that there's no skate park in Hunts Point is crazy. You know, there's only one skate park in the South Bronx, in the Bronx in general, actually. So people, so that being skaters, passionate about fighting for this, then also brings other people that, like me, that love music. We don't have a theater, so maybe it's possibly having a theater in the place of the Sheridan that would be more beneficial to the community. So I feel like it just brings so many different people that with different interests just to combine and fight for this one common goal and just, yeah.
Hmm. And then, Ryan, I mean, you're all very connected here because you're working with youth and you're giving presentations yep. to youth to empower them to then turn around and make demands from people who make the decisions. You helped create an interactive presentation that drew parallels between corporate efforts to privatize California's water and people's struggles against large-scale infrastructure projects in Mesoamerica. I mean, these are very big issues. Talk about your presentation called Sucked Dry, which includes graphics created by the Beehive Collective. That's an activist art group. You led a 3-week tour to 18 California cities to raise awareness about these issues.
Yeah. You know, kind of in this weird way, I mean, I'm definitely like a people person. I really like communicating with various like identities and like people and like kind of getting perspective. So in that same realm, the way that I organize is trying to connect and link groups together to create exponential change. So I became a part of the Beehive Design Collective last year. Was super inspired by their work because they basically create these really large-scale murals using metaphors of plant and animal species that are native to the regions that they talk about, and use these murals as visual textbooks to explain historical dynamics as well as things that people can do looking forward. Hearing presentations from performer bees about Mesoamerica and the infrastructure projects that were proposed there that, like, displaced indigenous communities and, like, all these really, you know, difficult dynamics really had me draw parallels to, like, my hometown love of, like, Stockton and, like, the Delta because I had been working on anti-water privatization efforts for a really long time before that. So connecting those two things together, I set off, and this presentation, Sucked Dry, is really all about drawing parallels between stories that I heard about communities in Mesoamerica to the stories that I know about what's going on with the Delta. And I think a large focus of my work is definitely trying to, like, empower and, like, strengthen the youth, but also to encourage more of, like, a intergenerational type of like organizing that allows people to really connect in ways to fix our communities, because I think that youth recognize this because our futures are kind of like on the line. But then also these like older folks that have fought the fight, like, are super disheartened, you know, obviously, yeah. But like, you know, have a lot of great stories to share. And I think I always think about how locally I'm super impacted by, you know, the Stockton community and, like, learning about all these really amazing people that are doing great stuff in my hometown. And, like, I always think about, you know, how I can try to how to talk to these folks and trying to, like, build spaces where we can learn from each other and take, like, our strengths, amplify each other's strengths, and, like, fill in each other's weaknesses to, like, really build solidarity amongst that. So,
and what is the state of the health of the Sacramento San Joaquin Delta?
The Delta is going through a lot. Just for readers that may not know, the Sacramento San Joaquin Delta is the largest set of waterways on the west coast of the Americas. And the state of the Delta is, you know, very much in a point of, like, a critical point, because there, like, a lot of, you know, the water use of these waterways are super exhaustive. I live right alongside the San Joaquin River, which is oversubscribed 5 times.
Oversubscribed 5 times? What does that mean?
It means that the water that is promised to different users is 5 times larger than the actual water that exists in the river. Like, it's strange. But yeah, I think that the Delta right now can thrive. I think that it right now, I think climate change in a way has really unearthed a lot of, like, the sociocultural impacts of, like, communities, because, you know, the most rural, poverty-stricken communities are hit first by the drought.
Right.
And, you know, elite, the financial elite, or like, you know, these corporations are like more immune. And I think that they also, in a way, have like a free pass to do whatever they want. I mean, a good example would be, you know, some bottled water companies have like their permits have expired and they're still extracting water. So I think that's like unreal.
Are people talking a lot about the drought in Stockton? I mean, are they treating it as an emergency?
Yes, I think there is a lot of conversations that are sparking up. But I mean, similarly to like what I mentioned before, it's like I think that when communities are hit by like a multitude of issues such as like poverty and gang culture, you know, you have all these efforts that are trying to fix these parts of the puzzle. And I think climate is something that should be more up in the conversation. I think that we're fighting to figure out everything that's going on. So, but I do think that climate should be more important, but it's not as so.
That is Ryan Camaro. He is working to restore the Delta, working with Restore the Delta. It's a grassroots group committed to the health of the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta. We are also joined by Celeste Tinajero. She designs curriculum on sustainable living for local schools in Reno. She's working on tackling single-use plastic bottles and bags. She goes to high schools and also elementary schools to educate students about everything from why they shouldn't use plastic bottles to packaging. And we're also joined by J.P. Vinnels. He is from South Bronx, and he leads presentations at various local schools and organizes a youth summit focused on educating youth and their parents about environmental issues facing South Bronx. And the young people on today's show are doing amazing work. They are in town to receive the Brower Youth Award. The event will take place next Tuesday from 7:30 to 9. The ceremony is free. It's at the Herps Theater in San Francisco. Find ticket information at yourcallradio.org. And if you'd like to join us, if you have a question for today's guest or a comment, if you'd like to talk about environmental issues that you're tackling in your area, if you work with youth, we'd love to hear from you. If you work in the schools, what will it take to make sure that more youth are learning about these issues? We'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Alexandra in Santa Cruz. Hi, Alexandra. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Your topic made me think of a dear friend of mine. I grew up in New York City, and she has started a company called FutureFill that is providing refillable services to students at Barnard and Columbia in New York City, where you sign up and you can get your shampoo, conditioner, and body wash products refilled. And they're on Instagram and they're on Facebook, and they've just started. So they're right now they're just located in New York City, but I know they want to expand to college campuses around the country. And I think it's a really exciting new idea. And they're reaching out to students to get students on board with this practice.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. We will put a link to that. Again, it's FutureFill on our website. Celeste, what are your thoughts on that?
That, you know, if we had something like that in Reno, I know everyone would take advantage of it. And it would be so awesome because it comes off as very sustainable, honestly. You know, especially for college students who can just take their bottles and refill them. I mean, and that's kind of it is an issue because I don't know that a lot of college students are into the recycling and actually disposing of their products correctly. And so that would be an awesome educational kind of thing, too, for college students. So,
yeah. Another thing, too, that I find really interesting about that is just trying to reimagine ways that we can make our world a better place. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the same could be said for, like, the fact that there's more houses that sit empty than the homeless people in the country.
Sure.
Or the fact that there's, like, so much food waste. You know, I think that, like, there's cool ways to look at, like, our society and figure out, okay, like, FutureFill is just, like, a really good example of how we can, like, really change, like, how we, like, think the world should be,
right.
You know?
Right.
Well, and also, just to give you a sense, and I'm sure you all know this, but I think it's important, I just found some statistics from EcoWatch on plastic pollution. Over the last 10 years, we have produced more plastic than during the whole of the last century.
Oh, my
gosh. Crazy.
50% of the plastic we use just once and then throw it away. I mean, we live in such a throwaway culture.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And something as easy as refilling your shampoo, conditioner, soap, I mean, it's very easy. Most co-ops have this.
Right.
Some places in San Francisco and Berkeley have shops just for this.
Oh, cool.
And when you think about the fact that the average American throws away 185 pounds of plastic every year, and so much of that ends up in the ocean.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
That's the problem.
Right. I mean, people say, yes, the onus should be on the plastics industry. That's important, but it also is important to realize that we can reuse all these things.
Right.
Right.
For sure. Or not purchase
or
the
not
plastic
in the first place.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I think the general culture is like, you know, it's polarizing, right? Like when people are like, oh, like, blame the companies or like blame the consumer, and it gets into this like you or me or who's to blame. But I think it's like as a society, like
yes,
trying to build these conversations where it's like, hey, let's think about what we can do and like together. And I think that's important.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like we don't have any of that in the South Bronx. So like right now I'm feeling like I'm thinking of a new campaign right now. Like I'm just inspired.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Mm-hmm. And what else do you want to share with us about the South Bronx?
Ooh, there's so much.
In terms of like what people are really talking about right now when it comes to the work that you're doing.
Right. I mean, it's always when you mention the South Bronx, there's always a debate regarding racial discrimination and things like that. People of color always being disadvantaged with many different things. For example, a lot of the city's garbage does go to the South Bronx, and we're forced to have to clean up and deal with the nasty odors and all that crazy stuff.
The city's garbage.
Yeah, the city's garbage, yeah. We're forced to carry a large percentage of that.
Are you talking about Manhattan?
Yeah.
The entire New York City.
New York City goes
New
to South Bronx. Wow,
yeah.
That's a lot of garbage.
Yeah,
so much.
Yeah, exactly. So as soon as you walk into the South Bronx, you can smell it.
And then where does it go from there? Is it in the landfill in South Bronx?
Yeah, yeah. In the landfill in the South Bronx and the Bronx River, you smell it. It's a little crazy, yeah, for sure. Also, in the South Bronx, well, Hunts Point in general, we have 50,000 trucks coming in and out of our local streets daily. And as you can imagine, that contributes to, like, pollution and makes it very unsafe for pedestrians to cross the streets every day. So it's crazy. It's unreal.
Are many organizations talking about environmental racism in South Bronx? And how do people respond to that?
Definitely. There's always a debate going on about that, especially in the South Bronx. Just talking about how a lot of the decisions that were made in the past, how it's affecting us now. And just, I think the more that time passes, the more that topic just becomes more popular and more of a fight. So, yeah, I definitely feel like everyone's getting more involved in this and trying to make noise about this topic.
You all talked about how, in many cases, a lot of people you work with are really just, they want to make ends meet, putting food on the table, making sure they have enough hours at work. And so what are your thoughts about the political system in this country? We just had the Democratic presidential campaign. They didn't spend too much time on climate change, although Bernie Sanders did say that the biggest national threat, security threat to the United States is climate change. Everybody else chose a country. He chose climate change.
Yeah.
They didn't really elaborate much on climate change. But what are your thoughts? Are they speaking to you and the people that you work with?
Definitely.
Ryan.
I mean, yeah. Bernie Sanders is definitely the candidate that we are, at least like, you know, communities that I surround myself with, really find affinity with. Just because, you know, I think a lot of the platforms that he raises elevate the issues that most candidates don't necessarily want to talk about. And also, I think that being super critical about where your candidate's funding comes from is so important.
For sure.
Bernie Sanders built his grassroots campaign and raised money from normal everyday people that want the changes made, versus maybe some other candidates that have had their funding by corporations and people that have interests that connected to those money. So
All of the candidates.
Yeah.
Except for Bernie Sanders.
All of the candidates, except for Bernie. Yeah. Right. So, yeah, I definitely resonate with Bernie, and I think a lot of, definitely a lot of, like, what he talks about, you know, hits home, at least, like, with the stuff that I see in Stockton and in places.
What about you, Celeste?
I believe Sanders definitely talks about most of the issues that other candidates don't want to talk about or even bring up. Or, you know, put a light on. And so I think that in itself speaks to me and gives me a little bit of a reason to believe that with our work, our community's work, supported by someone like Sanders' work, will definitely equal into something beautiful that we can change.
And JP? Yeah.
Same. I feel the same way as Ryan and Celeste. I just turned 18 recently. Well, I turned 19, but this is going to be my first time voting. So I'm very, like, mm-hmm. like learning mm-hmm. how this stuff works. I'm just very interested. I'm nervous. But I'm also, like, yeah, definitely. I think I only saw a little bit of the debate the other day. But, yeah, it was definitely leaning towards Sanders. And I was definitely, like, interested in what he was talking about.
There's a quote that I found kind of, like, echoing from Bernie, saying that, like, it's not going to be just one candidate that changes the course. I think Bernie's right. brought up a lot of dialogues that form bases for us to build off of as right. an entire group of people, like United Definitely. States, right? So it's like, it's a movement. And I think that even speaking and hearing from some of the winners today and just like seeing what everyone's doing is really amping me up to realize that like the little piece that I'm like fighting, like people are fighting little pieces, and all those pieces make up like a totally right. awesome uh-huh. social justice yes. mosaic. You know?
Well, you're all doing amazing work, and I hope you take Richard's advice to keep up the enthusiasm, because we need your enthusiasm. Ryan Camaro had led a 3-week tour to 18 California cities where he presented Sucked Dry to local audiences. He's also raising awareness about the fragile Sacramento San Joaquin Delta system. Celeste Tinajero works on tackling single-use plastic bottles and bags, and she designs curriculum for high schools and elementary schools in Reno, Nevada. And J.P. Vinnels leads presentations at various local schools in South Bronx and organizes a youth summit focusing on educating youth and their parents about the environmental issues facing South Bronx. And I hope you can go to the Brower Youth Awards ceremony next Tuesday at 7:30, the Herps Theater in San Francisco. It's a free event. Head over to yourcallradio.org. And thank you all for joining us. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. Many people in the Bay Area survive by recycling trash. What are their stories? On the next Your Call, we'll speak with Amir Sultani about his new documentary, Dogtown Redemption, which gives a voice to three recyclers in West Oakland. Alliance Metals has allowed many to survive, but it has to shut down next August or face daily fines. What impact will this have on recyclers? And what do you want to know about those who recycle in order to survive? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Nock Nguyen produces the show. Malihe Razazan is senior producer, and Matt Martin is executive. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and David LaTulipe is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.